Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week?
Pretty good, Jim. How you doing?
I am not doing bad, getting out from under some weather. You're lucky. You're a little further south than we are, so you don't get much of anything. The storms in D.C. have nothing to do with the weather, do they?
No, they don't. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We've got a fun show going. This is the great thing about during the off season. We can go to any direction we want. This week, what I want to get into is there's so much going on in college football, and there's no one person on top of college football who could, even if they don't mandate things, at least set the direction of college football. You have different players. You have the network player. You have the conference players, the advertisers, a lot of different people with their hand in it. But what I'd like to do is, on occasion, I like to hand over the power to my co-hosts, okay? Put them in charge of college football. Are you ready to take on that responsibility? James Franklin wanted Nick Saban. I said no. I want Steve Pavlik.
I careful what you ask for. But yeah, sure.
All right. Well, I typically call this person the czar of college football, but you're in D.C. So instead of the czar, let's pretend, Steve, that you were elected president, okay, of college football. You have a mandate. Every toss-up state went your way. You got the popular vote. You got every region, Big Ten region, Southeast Conference region, Big 12 region, they all voted Pavlik. We want Pavlik. The signs were out there with that. So now you're in your first 100 days. So if you're going to make things happen, I want you to get out your Sharpie and get ready for your executive orders, Steve.
I got it out. I'm ready to sign.
Well, I wonder, what do you think? How many of our listeners really understand all of the things that I put out there?
I think you have a pretty educated group of listeners, so I'm going to put north of 75%.
Okay. Well, let's hope so. I hope it did go over people's heads with, what the heck is this guy talking about? So anyway, I gave you this mandate a few days ago that we were going to put you in charge of college football. So what's nice is, Steve, not only you, but we also got Dad Pavlik's input. Okay, exactly. So you sent on an email from your dad with some interesting information. We'll get into that. But first, let's start with you. You're the guy the people wanted. You're the president with the mandate. You could change anything you want in college football. Where are you headed first, Steve?
Well, in terms of the first thing I would do is I'd probably expand the college football playoff, I think, to 16 teams. I think I would get rid of the conference championships. I would accelerate the season in terms of starting earlier. What I'd like to do is actually have the first round of playoff games on Thanksgiving weekend. So we have games Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And potentially, I guess, I don't know if we want to compete with the NFL on Sunday. But I think that's sort of the idea. And then I'd like to wrap things up with a national championship on New Year's Day in Pasadena. I think that's sort of my goal. I think that would maybe cut down on some of the December chaos here for a lot of these coaches and this transfer portal, and you know how difficult that is if you're still in the playoffs and trying to recruit your own team. I am sympathetic to that. So I think that's sort of where my initial focus would be. I think I would include the idea of having spring scrimmages against other teams, whether you know Division I teams want to include the FCS schools as part of that. Maybe that's where they can get some of the revenue, because what I'd like to do is outline any games with FCS opponents. Nobody wants to watch those. I get that those lower tier schools need the money. So I think maybe there's a way to subsidize them, and this may be it, whether it's the spring practice or just have these two big conferences subsidized. The other thing to do is just sort of recognize that this is a direction we're headed. So let's just have the SEC and the Big Ten, kind of like the NFL. You have two conferences. Let's just hurry up and get there, probably dissolve the ECC in terms of the teams that are of interest to the Big Ten and the SEC, as well as the Big 12. And I think from that point, sort of have regional sort of schedules. So you sort of play your three or four teams every year. I'd have more done regionally, almost getting back to where we all started in terms of more regional games before all this conference expansion. And then you sort of rotate, again, similar to the NFL model. I think that's sort of what I would do. In terms of on the field, I would get rid of the targeting penalty at all. I just don't think it's needed. That's my view. Others may not share that, but I got elected under your scenario, so I guess they have to deal with it. I would also make the college football pass interference rule similar to the NFL in terms of a spot foul, as opposed to just 15 yards. And then I would also put a clock on the reviews. You know, it takes too long to have these guys decide and Booth go back. Look, if you haven't changed your mind after a minute of looking at it, then the call on the field stands. And let's just move on. So these are the things that I would focus on in my first 100 days, so to speak. Throw a lot out there. Feel free to respond.
Well, yes, you put a lot out there. Let's unravel some of it. Let's start with the playoffs, because that's been a great topic of conversation, and it ties in a few things with the schedule and so on. I think the expansion of the playoffs, first of all, is inevitable. I never quite understood why it was 12 teams and giving four a bye. I think it almost, the logical expansion, I thought should have been to eight teams, but I think some of the powers that be in the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten said, whoa, 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 we want more of our teams in there. And if you were guaranteeing, you know, an ACC team, a Big 12 team, a Group of Five team, you know, you didn't leave much for their conferences, and that was a way for them to do it. My thinking, though, is if you're going to go to 12 and in the same number of rounds, in the same time frame, you could go to 16. Why not just get it to the 16? It's the proper number, because then you could go 16, 8, 4, 2, 1. So that makes sense. I think also that pushing the schedule up really makes sense, because I think they found, or we as fans found, Steve, that it was almost as if, not that we didn't know when the games were, we're big followers of the sport. You know, we're going to know exactly when Penn State's playing, exactly when the other games are. But I think a lot of other people were like, oh, wait a minute, it's a Thursday night and here's a college football playoff game. And that was towards avoiding the NFL. But I think that your guideline would have got us there in a much more elegant way.
I think so, but I tend to agree with myself. So.
Well, and to keep, I am not a slave to the bowl games. You know, to me personally, this whole, the Rose Bowl has to start at exactly 5 o'clock Eastern time so they could see the sunset at the proper time there. I don't care. I don't care about that.
That may be one area we disagree. I went out for Penn State, I guess it was technically January 1, 2009, and that is a really cool experience, the parade, everything. And to me, that's sort of like, make it a destination, kind of like Omaha and the World Series for college baseball. I like the idea of like the road to Pasadena and just having that be the setting for the college football championship.
I get that as part of the tradition and so on, but, and if it works out, great. But if it doesn't, I don't want to be beholden to the Rose Bowl.
Oh,
to
that's
me,
true.
That's the tail wagging the dog. Pushing the games up, you know, make it earlier in the year, get started. I think the only thing keeping the conference championship games going is that there's a payday for it, Steve. And I think if you expand the playoffs to 16 teams, that money should make up for whatever's lost in the conference playoff or conference championship games.
I would think so, because presumably under this, you're including more teams from the two major conferences. So again, I think the money would be there. We also don't need two buys. I don't really understand that. That's something now that we've had. I mean, Penn State had like a buy last year with like second or third week. And I get that's why we're just sort of elongating the season unnecessarily to the point we start competing with the NFL. Nobody wants to compete with the NFL. Even people that go to church don't want to compete with the NFL.
Yes, and I think that to push the games up and, you know, reduce the bye, get rid of the conference championship games, get rid of the second bye. And I think the other part to this is, and again, this is me fighting with tradition a little bit. One of the flies in the ointment was Army-Navy, because that's always the week after everything else is done. I would say, you know what, play that the first game of the year. And I think it could still have the same pizzazz to it. In fact, I think it would get as much or more attention in the opening week. Do it when both Army and Navy, both teams are 0-0. You don't have this, well, someone is just playing out the string. They're 2-9 going into the game. Make it, they're both unbeaten. It's the first game of the year. And I think it could still have as much import as it does right now, Steve.
Or just play it like at noon, the day of the first round of the playoffs, whenever it works out. I mean, I don't think it's going to lose its allure. That's a very special experience. Anybody's been fortunate to see it. I really don't see that if it's with the playoff weekend, but not completing against a playoff game in terms of actual time zone. I don't think the game would lose any of its luster.
I don't think the game would lose luster almost anywhere, but I do like the idea of making it a little special. And probably the first week of the season, and we'll get into a little more of these out-of-conference games, but there's probably less competition early in the year. And also, if you're doing it, say, over Labor Day weekend, when the schedules expand a little bit, meaning there are teams playing Sunday night, there are teams playing on Monday, you could find a good time slot for them in that Labor Day weekend with very little other competition. And I think it would be good timing. I think it would work very well. I don't think you mentioned, though, Steve, the idea of taking away that automatic bye for the conference champions. I think that has to be done away with, too.
So I just assume that was implied with getting rid of the championship games. That sort of you just sort of have now sort of set number of teams from presumably the two major conferences and just sort of let them go at it. Or you could have a situation where you just have the Big Ten schools do their playoff and then play the SEC champion winner.
Well,
we get to two conferences, that may be where we're headed.
When we get back, I want to address the idea of just getting to the two conferences. We'll do that when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante, or I should say President Pavlik. We made him president of the college football world, the college football universe, so he can make any mandate he wants. We went through a few of his items in quarter number one. Before we go any further, Steve, I did want to mention, and we're recording on Sunday, so things might be finalized. One of the news items that came up today was Juwan Sider, longtime Penn State running backs coach, may end up at Notre Dame. We don't have the final word as we record. I know you're a huge Notre Dame fan also, Steve, so I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, it's definitely a loss for Penn State. I mean, running back has been one of the stronger positions, and I think Sider deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't know if he's just leaving for more money, because it is sort of a lateral move there at the position coach. It's sort of one thing that raises my eye, just because we don't have all the full information at this point when we're recording. And, you know, I think it's good that it happened later, because I believe, you know, Singleton and Allen have already made the decision to come back. You know, had this happened earlier, might that have impacted the decision? I don't know. But yeah, an opportunity for a good replacement. But, you know, I think one of the challenges that we've seen at some of the position level is, I'm thinking specifically of the wide receiver, is, you know, can you have some stability there? Running back was one of those positions that had been pretty stable under Sider, under Franklin. Wide receiver has not been that position. I just hope it doesn't become a similar pattern.
Well, the couple things with Singleton and Catron Allen, there's going to be another transfer window in the spring. So theoretically, if they wanted to follow Sider, they could. I don't want to say don't worry that it's impossible. Anything is possible these days. But I think what I think the fact is that they made the commitment to Penn State also, not just Juwan Sider and their teammates. I think that's part of it. I think if there is a potential for an issue, it might more likely be some of the younger running backs who, if Juwan Sider recruited them, maybe they feel more loyalty there than they do to the university, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know how these NIL contracts work. I assume there's probably some retention clause. So for them just to leave without any guaranteed money there at Notre Dame wouldn't make a lot of sense. Plus, Notre Dame is a pretty good running back coming back next year, leaving Jeremiah Love. So do I really see them taking carries away from him? If I were them, I don't know that I would leave for that. But you're right. Maybe some of the running backs further down the depth chart, you know, could be more vulnerable now, or just, you know, hey, this is my recruiting coach that recruited me. I'm going to look elsewhere. So you know, we'll see what impact that has, I guess, moving forward.
I think there's also more going on than just the position coach. You have the coordinator, you have the head coach, you have the entire university that's going on. So, like I said, if there's an issue, I think it'd be with the younger guys, and then maybe how is recruiting going forward. I do believe also that Penn State has established they pay their coaches, especially the coordinators, very well. I would think the position coaches, they pay pretty well. You're coming into a full, you know, running back room. It could be pretty attractive place to bring somebody in. So we'll see how that finalizes with Juwan Sider. But as you mentioned, Steve, got to be a little bit curious when it's a lateral move, just like what we saw with Tom Allen going to Clemson.
Right. I mean, with Allen, you know, I think we sort of recognize now addition of Knowles, you know, suggests that, you know, Penn State was maybe ready to move on. You know, I don't know that they're going to be a replacement for Sider that's going to be necessarily an upgrade. Time will tell. But yeah, anytime it's a lateral move, it's sort of the question behind the surface. I don't think we've actually recorded since Knowles. I mean, you know, from my understanding is, one, not only to get some additional money, but two, it seemed to be some conflicts of personality there at Ohio State with Larry Johnson, defensive line coach, and Ryan Day. And just looked at it, untenable expectations, I think, at Ohio State. That is a place where it's national championship at bus. And now that you've sort of proven that you're able to do it, that's what people are going to expect. And I don't think any coach wants to really continue to coach under, again, those high expectations. I mean, Nick Saban will tell you what that was like. And you've seen similar coaches at Ohio State, too. I mean, I think everybody there sort of wins a national championship. And then at some point, you know, because of that pressure, moves on either voluntarily or not.
Well, let's get back to our President Pavlik and mandates for the college football world. You talked in terms of getting it over with, getting to the two conferences, the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, that it's an inevitability. And I'm not quite sure it is, Steve. It's kind of the whole, these conferences, well, let me ask you, okay, in your model where they cherry pick the best from the ACC and perhaps the Big 12 and split them up, Big 10, Southeast Conference, what happens to the low end that's currently in those conferences, the Big 10 and the Southeast Conference? Do you remove Vanderbilt? Do you remove Northwestern? Do you remove the dregs of the conference also? Do you picture that happening?
Yes, I do. You, your scenario, you guys elected me, so we're getting rid of the thin kids.
We get what we voted for.
No, you do. I mean, look, the direction this is headed, it's about the money. You know, now you're paying players. We have the TV contracts and everything. I mean, look, it's inevitably moving more towards an NFL model. I think we have to do things to preserve college football to make it special with some of the rules and the traditions, which is why I like sort of that regional element to get there. But yeah, schools that aren't adding value, that are detracting value, they need to go and need to make way for other schools that will make for a better experience. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, I think when you talk about concerns with last year's playoff model and trying to address things, you know, at least in the near term, is the idea that you have these schools like Boise State and SMU, I guess even Arizona State, to be honest, sort of getting byes and being allowed to get so far down the road in that playoff process. I mean, a lot of people just sort of find fault with that. So I think in the near term, if you want to try to adjust the byes so that these schools from the lesser conferences candidly are probably eliminated earlier in the process, you can have a better finished product moving down the line. I think that's probably in everybody's interest, at least financially.
I think the seeding thing will happen, if not right away, because you need unanimous approval to do that for this coming year. But once you get to the next level, yeah, I think there's no doubt that will go away. That was the flaw this past year, and we've gone over multiple times why it was that way. It was back when the Pac-12 existed. The Big 12 still had Oklahoma, Texas. It would have been a different world. So I think there's a, you know, pretty universal going that way. The other thing you – oh, just the last thought on this, getting rid of the Vanderbilts and Northwesterns. The reason why I don't think we'll have that purging of the bottom of each conference is the higher teams need those wins, okay? It's you have teams who are in whether it's the Big Ten or even the ACC, Big 12, Southeast Conference, they might be 3-5 teams in conference, but they get a 4-0 out of conference record. They're 7-5. They've got, the coach has a winning record. He gets a raise and the alumni are happy because you got a winning record. All of a sudden, if you purge the bottom of these conferences, all of a sudden that team in the middle that was, well, you know, just fat, dumb and happy going 6-6, 7-5, all of a sudden they're going to be 3-9 and people are going to be out of jobs. I think Vanderbilt plays a part, Northwestern plays a part in their conferences, is that they're the cannon fodder for the top of the conference.
I think there's some merit to that, I guess, under my regime, is we're getting rid of that. Okay, just so we're getting rid of the FCS game. So they're sort of one maybe marginal step up above that. Look, if you're going to have two conferences and you're going to have eight teams from each conference in the playoff, then there's no need to have these cupcake games. You can probably make the playoff by just having a little bit better than a 500 season and then to have a chance there. I mean, that's not all that dissimilar from the NFL right now.
That is the case. Well, let's look at the scheduling, because this is something that James Franklin talks about quite a bit. I'll throw out to you. You kind of hit on it a little bit. No more of these FCS games. And I think the solution you had, you play one of those teams in a spring game. I think that's the perfect solution. It gives those teams some money. And, you know, let's use, you know, Penn State as an example, playing Villanova. You don't have to play Drew Allard, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen. You can get your, you know, third string guys in, your freshmen in. Let them play on the field in front of a crowd at Beaver Stadium and have it in a quote-unquote game environment. I think that would be good for everybody. And you don't have a team coming in necessarily losing 56-0.
Yeah, and you could probably televise it, and you can get your guys sort of a live, honest look. I mean, having played enough football, you know more or less just practicing against each other know, what a lot of these calls are going to be and everything. So you're not really giving an honest look when you're out there scrimmaging against yourself. So I'm all for it. And I think, again, that's a good way to give these guys at these lower schools a chance to play at a big time environment, give the schools a chance to make money so they can sustain their programs. I mean, obviously, I think it's a good idea because I proposed it. But
let me throw in one more thought on the playoffs before we move on in the next segment. I like, especially if you're going to 16 teams, make those first two rounds home playoff games. And you lessen the burden on the fans to have to travel so many times, so many weeks in a row, if you give them two home playoff games.
Complete agreement. Complete agreement.
And you have a better chance to sell tickets that way. So I think there's a financial way. And if you get the season done earlier, I know you could get snow or cold, you know, over multiple months. But if you could start those playoff games, like you said, around Thanksgiving and then first week of December, most Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, the weather there is better than it is in late December.
Absolutely. A few weeks makes a big difference when you're talking about the Midwest. The other thing, and I don't know, this maybe getting some of my dad's comments and questions, if you get into the revenue sharing, where, you know, if you're going to go ahead and actually be able to keep the money from your concessions for the school, then there's greater incentive to host the playoff games.
Exactly. All right. That's it for quarter two. We got lots more to go when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. We're talking college football in general. I have made Steve president of college football. He made some real serious changes. Now we're going to go to a little bit of the kind of off the field stuff, the other stuff, the things that are a little bit more fun. And, you know, I want to throw out to you, I'm going to be like what, your general counsel or chief of staff or something. So I'll be able to whisper in your ear some of my ideas. And I want to talk to you about television coverage of the game, Steve, and see if you could help us out. Here are a couple thoughts that I have that I think you should mandate. No such thing as going to commercial after a touchdown, have a kickoff, and go back to commercials. It drives me absolutely crazy, Steve.
Absolutely. I agree completely with that.
The other thing is that they've made rules to shorten the game, okay? Clock runs more often. In other words, translation is they're giving us less football. And they'll talk about having to fit into that time allotment. You know, there's the noon time slot, and then they want to start the next game at 3:30. I've got some other advice, Steve. I could save 18 minutes, okay? When you schedule a noon game, how about starting it at noon instead of at 12:18?
Also agree. That's not just for TV in terms of being inconsiderate. That's also for the fans that show up.
Yes. If you're telling us it's a noon game, start it at noon. Not that difficult, not that hard, and especially when you're trying to compact the game to fit. It even happens in college basketball. You know, they're allocating 2 hours. You know, they play a game at noon, then at 2 o'clock. And all of a sudden, they missed a tip-off at the 2 o'clock game. So I don't like that. And, you know, I think there's a couple other little things. This fake injury thing, Steve, they've got to do something about that. Do you have a suggestion there?
I do actually. I think you should have to be out for at least the entire series to discourage that. Because now it's just sort of like, whether it's serious or not, you sort of, you know, run off the field, delay the game, and then you come back in. Now I get, you know, coaches are just basically telling their players, if anything at all feels wrong, or look at the time and situational awareness, if you want to sit down on the field, better safe than sorry. But to your point, it's distracting from the game. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is more of now a televised product. And I think that really hurts from there. And look, when you're sitting there and it's cold and some guy's laying on the field, that's not a pleasant experience either. I've been in that situation too.
A problem what I have is when they're obviously faking it. And you know it's the case because you're watching after the play. The player's walking just fine. And all of a sudden, he goes down. You think he was just shot. And we know that is not the case. I have a couple other little ones, and this is being a Penn State homer, but whiteout. Penn State and the Big Ten Conference should be in sync on this and just tell the television networks, this is how it's going to work. Next year, Penn State plays Oregon early in the year when it's still warm enough in September. Would be a perfect game for a whiteout. Fox, if you want to cover it, fine, cover it. The game's starting at 7:30, though.
My only gripe with that is since Oregon's traveling east, I'd actually start the game at noon and try to get an advantage here on the body clock. But yeah, in general, I agree with your idea that this is not going back to the movie, much more televised product right now. That is the best product that you see in terms of that atmosphere. And to try to discourage that from a television rating standpoint, I don't understand that. I think that's part of Kraft, who I think did a really good job as an athletic director, getting this alignment, making the right strides for Penn State moving forward. It also just, I think, reinforces how abysmal Sandy Barber was. Now, anybody pushed for her to be hired should no longer be associated with Penn State, in my opinion. But I guess where I'm going is, you know, throw your weight around. Okay, Michigan and Ohio State always play at noon. Just say, look, this is the way it's going to be. And if you don't like it, we'll find another network who does.
And there should be easy enough ways to accommodate it. If it's so important to Fox to televise it, let them televise that week at night. If not, NBC gets night games. I'm sure NBC would love to broadcast the whiteout game. Here's another idea that I had. Wanted to see what you thought about it. You know how in the NFL, they make the schedules based on how you finished the previous year. If you finish first, your schedule is going to be tougher than if you finish last. It feels like, you know, the Big Ten sort of kind of does that in that through the rivalry thing. You know, Ohio State will always play Michigan. Those are two teams that will be at the top. But I think they should formalize that, Steve. And I know it might be hard to do like in 1 year increments. Maybe they got to do it over the last 2 years if they want to do every game is like home and home. But I think it should be set up where Purdue, who was the worst team in the conference, they don't have the same type of tough schedule that Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State have. What do you think of that?
I don't know. That's harder in the sense that you have so many changes with the rosters. You could have a really good team and they basically lose all their talent and they're going to play a really difficult schedule next year without that. I mean, I don't know. I guess what I was sort of envisioning was getting more that regional model where Penn State would play that sort of core group and then it would probably rotate around. Maybe it'd be that sort of Big Ten West, which presumably would be a lot of the new additions from the formal, I guess, Pac-12 conference and the like. Whether there's a Big Ten Midwest section, you know, with that sort of Ohio State, Michigan State, you know, I guess obviously Penn State, in my opinion, would probably be more that Big Ten East. And who knows, maybe they're playing Pitt every year because under this scenario that Pitt may have been part of this now. Notre Dame would probably be part of the Big Ten in terms of what I was proposing.
Well, I would argue with that about how a team could be good this year, not so good next year. Some of that happens, but I'm willing to bet, Steve, 3 or 4 years from now, Ohio State will be good, Penn State will be good, Oregon will be good, Michigan will be good. I'm just saying, you know, that will be the case. While we're at it, doing the things off the field, a couple things and allow you your take on it too, but I want a couple little things, as long as we're hitting the broadcasters, the TV. Gus Johnson is no longer allowed to do nicknames. No Maserati Marv, okay? Matt Millen cannot say the running back was running with his eyes. Okay. Those are a few more things I would outlaw. Are there other things that you have, pet peeves, things that happen off the field that you would change in college football?
Probably deport Paul Feinbaum. Have him go to the island where there's not any electronics or communications. We don't have to hear from him again. I think that would be up at the top in terms of my executive order, so to speak. What I would like, I don't think they'll ever do this, is I would like the option to just listen to like the local commentators call the game. I'd love to listen to just Steve Jones and watch the game and hear it real time. The problem when you try to watch the game and listen to the broadcast, it's not synced correctly. And you sort of get frustrated. Too many of these national guys really don't bring anything to the listening to anything of value, in my opinion. And I would like, you know, to see maybe, you know, Steve Jones sit next to the guy with Ohio State and have them talk. They do a really good job in the lead up to the game, or at least give you an option, you know, if you want to listen to one team versus the other, to have that. Again, I don't think they're going to do that because they're paying these guys a lot of money to offer very little value, in my opinion. Although one guy I would like to hear more from is Todd Blackledge. I know that sounds biased as a Penn State fan, but I always think he does a very good job of, you know, not only calling the game, but sort of showing you what's happening and why. And I think he is somebody that I would personally like to hear more from.
Steve, I think that's a fantastic idea because I hear a lot of people, you know, they delay the TV or the radio to sync it up, and it's well worth it because it, you know, that Jack Ham and Steve Jones know the Penn State team so much better than the national guys do. What I wouldn't mind seeing is most of the networks who cover these games, they have multiple outlets. So you already see this when ESPN is covering Monday night, and you could go to ESPN2 or ESPN 38 and get the Manning broadcast or something like that. I saw it this past weekend for a golf. It was ESPN Plus, where for the golf tournament, you could follow one group of golfers. It was on different outlets on ESPN Plus. So why not do that? Fox has, you know, FS1 and FS2 and, you know, other places like that. Maybe you can't do that for all the games because you just don't have all enough outlets. But I could think for the bigger games, I love that idea. I would love to see, you know, Penn State playing Oregon and watch it and see hear Steve Jones and Jack Ham. That's why you were elected president, Steve.
Wow. Then probably the other candidate wasn't very good.
Okay. We're not going to get into the DC stuff. You know, here's the other one that I would like to see change, Steve, is as bat with the replay. And I think it's great that they have the replay used correctly. They have fixed a lot of mistakes being made. But why in the world do they seem to have so much trouble placing the ball? There have been multiple times when it's obvious the ball carrier gets beyond the line needed for the first down. And the official, they mark it a good couple feet behind the line. And then you go to replay and there's no help. Could you just use the technology, put something in the ball so that we can identify where it is?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't know if there is like communication from the replay booth to the person actually placing the ball. I mean, that might help to be like, look, you're a yard short, move it up. I think that might help. But yeah, I don't want to get too bogged down that because I think we really have to accelerate the game and the product. So I think, you know, maybe that line communication, no, it's at the 43, put the ball at the 43, whether that's coming from the replay or the booth or whomever, if the guy or gal is marking the ball wrong. But again, just something I mentioned before, just to reiterate, the reviews take way too long. Okay, it should look for a minute. If you can't identify anything, just let the call on the field stand. I really think that's important.
And you're right. And have someone in the booth with the common sense to, you know what, if it's second and four or if it's second and four and a half, I don't really care. But when this is third or fourth down and yes, I'm sitting home in my Barca lounger and I can see that the marking was atrocious. There should be somebody on a headset knowing that also, or give me the headset. All right, that's it for quarter three. When we come back, we've got Dad Pavlik's points. We're going to get to those in the fourth quarter. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four of our show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. I've made Steve a president of the college football world. And here's the great thing. And hiring Steve, and you hire any president, it's like getting married, Steve, okay? You don't just marry your spouse, you marry the whole family, okay? When you elect the president, you don't just elect the guy, you elect the family. And fortunate, was it Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton, they said it's a twofer deal, you get them both. Well, we get not only Steve Pavlik as president, we get Steve's dad as part of the equation also, don't we, Steve?
Apparently.
So I know you shared with your dad the theme of this show, and you sent on an email. I know no one else could see me holding up the email.
Multiple pages.
Multiple pages from Dad Pavlik, which I like. It's detailed. He brings up his ideas. He explains them. He supports them. Some of his ideas are kind of like in lockstep with some of the thoughts that you had, but I'd like to go through some of them because he has some good ideas and good thoughts and get your reaction. And one of the first thing he said, assuming pay for play system is here to stay, which gives me the idea he's not crazy about it, but it is here to stay. He says the establishment of an NFL-like system for sharing revenues among teams, compensating players, and restricting player movement. So I guess that's kind of in lockstep with what you're talking about with an NFL model. Although I will point out, within conferences, there already is that sharing of revenue. Like the TV revenue is shared evenly among all Big Ten teams. They make the playoffs. That revenue is shared also.
Yeah, no, I think it's we get to the sort of the SEC and Big Ten two conference system, but I think that's probably going to more or less take care of itself, that the SEC and the Big Ten would probably be sharing similar amounts of revenue with all the schools participating, getting similar amounts of revenue. I think now the problem is you have different revenue sharing, obviously, between the Big Ten SEC level and then the lesser conferences with ACC and the Big 12. That's why I think you have a lot of these ACC schools looking to leave, at least the bigger name ones. I don't know that for certain. I haven't talked to him since he sent this. I am going to go see him tonight. It's not like I don't talk to my dad. I suspect that's what he's referring to.
You know, get some clarification on it, and next time we could get more of it. But I understand what he's saying. The problem is, even with the sharing of revenue, he mentions the NFL and, you know, how compensation is shared. And he mentions, you know, the team that's often brought up is Green Bay, okay? Such a small market, but they're able to compete with the New York Giants because of revenue sharing. The issue, though, is whether there's revenue sharing or not, there's still well-run organizations, and there's organizations that aren't run so well. And ironically, your two New York NFL entries in this, they are run very poorly. It's why, you know, the New York Giants decide, hey, we're going to build around Daniel Jones and not Saquon Barkley. And the Eagles say, you know what? You don't want Saquon, we'll take him.
But money doesn't solve everything. I think that much is for certain.
All right. Also, and I just highlighted some of these ideas from your dad. And he said, like the NFL, all player signings should be contractual and the aggregate amount of compensation each team can pay limited by the salary cap in effect for that year. Well, the interesting thing is, Steve, that's kind of what is coming to college football with this, where the schools are going to be able to compensate. And right now, if all goes through correctly through the legal system, schools will have around $22 million to distribute among their athletes, not all football. But I think the more important part of what your father's talking about is players signing contracts. Now, so that contract could be for multiple years. So, you know, do you foresee that meaning, you know, I'll sign a 3-year contract with Penn State for $1 million a year, a 3-year contract. Now, does that mean I will be obligated to stay at Penn State? I can't transfer.
That's my reading. And I think that's probably a good thing. I mean, look, the combination of NIL and the transfer portal hitting both at the same time, it's just not tenable. You can't have these guys changing back and forth. I mean, now they're talking about Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State. Is he going to go to Penn State? Is he going to go to Michigan? I mean, as much as I'd like to see him come here to win, that's not good for the sport long term. And I think that's what my dad's trying to get to. And honestly, I think that's the direction that the NCAA wants to get to is, you know, let's try to do the right thing by the players and give them a chance to make some money. But like any other contract, you know, it's like, yeah, you're giving up something in exchange for some financial compensation. And I think that's to be expected. And if you don't want to do that as a player, then don't sign.
Do you know what, Steve? I agree 1,000% with Dad Pavlik on this one. And I think if they made a standard contract of, say, I use 3 years as a standard, and I think – perfect example now, Bo Prabula. If when he came in, he signed a 3-year contract with Penn State, he stayed through 3 years, fulfilled his obligation. But you know what? He does not see a window of opportunity to start at Penn State. So guess what? With his redshirt year, he still has 2 years of eligibility. It's kind of like baseball. You have so many years that you're obligated to your original team, then you could move on, and he has 2 years of freedom. I think that's perfect. And also to your point, if you're a big name, if you're Arch Manning, you don't need that $1 million a year. You're going to get more in NIL, which is a separate thing. If you say, hey, I don't want to sign the contract, you're giving yourself the freedom, but you're also setting yourself up where if you break a leg or do something, tear ligaments, and maybe you can't play then, or you become a much lesser player, you lose the opportunity of the 3-year contract.
Yeah, you do 2 years for $500,000 thinking like, all right, you know, I wanted the option to maybe move around. I mean, this happens all the time at the professional level. It shouldn't be difficult to navigate at the collegiate level.
Yeah, I'm with it on that. The other thing your dad put out, and leave it to a dad to use common sense and be thinking beyond the field itself. He says maybe the scholarships should extend for an additional period following eligibility to play college sports, meaning the academic portion of the scholarship that players – hey, you go through the system, maybe you didn't get your degree, you're young and dumb, and maybe you didn't do everything you should have, but hey, Penn State used you to play on the field. They could leave open opportunities for the academic scholarship, which, just as an aside, it reminds me, in Major League Baseball, where players coming out of high school get the opportunity to go to the baseball, Major League Baseball, or starting in minor leagues, or go to college. If you sign with the major league team, what they will often do is include money to go to college whenever you want. So there's a similarity here. And I'm, again, 100% going with Dad Pavlik here, because I think I know it's becoming more and more professional. But you know what? 98% of the players don't play in the NFL. How about giving them the best opportunity academically?
I agree. Or if they do, it's not for very long. And so I agree a lot with my dad. But again, I'll just reiterate, he is a lawyer, and I lost a lot of arguments growing up.
My dad was an accountant, and I lost just as many arguments to him, Steve. So your dad doesn't have to be a lawyer. But I think, Steve, that we really – and I know everyone is arguing now, it's all about the payday. It's about getting to the NFL. And I understand that is the goal of these players, and that's fine. But they're still very young, and don't the adults in the room, you know, the one signing the billion-dollar TV contracts and all that – don't they have some kind of obligation to the 90-some percent of the players that will either never make it to the NFL or make it to one or two training camps, and that's it? Make it as easy as possible for these guys to succeed academically and then in life.
I think so. I mean, I think there's sort of an obligation to do that. And look, I just sort of think back years ago when I would have been, you know, 19 or 20 years old, the idea to have all that much money at my disposal, what that would have been, the unnecessary distractions and conflicts that would arise from that. You know, it's not an easy thing to do and deal with, particularly at that age. And so my guess is there are probably a lot of guys moving forward that are going to want to have the opportunity to fall back on that degree. And this would be one way to ensure that they have that opportunity.
And I think that's one thing as Penn Staters we can be proud of. I do think James Franklin still does emphasize education to the team. And I do think there's a lot of people in the Penn State community, some of them that I know pretty well and work with, who really are working on helping these players and guide them and work with them. But with that said, I can't help but remember an old story. And this is as a New York Met fan from 1,000 years ago, Tug McGraw, who was a great relief pitcher for both the Mets and the Phillies. So I think a lot of our listeners will be familiar with him. He, back then, getting a World Series share, meaning getting paid for making it to the World Series and winning it, that money meant something back then, okay? And he was once asked what he's going to do with all that World Series bonus money. And his response was, well, 90% of it I'm going to spend on wine, women, and song, and the rest of it I'm going to waste.
There's probably a lot of truth in that, to be honest.
And I think there's probably a lot of truth to that with these collegiate athletes now. And that's where not only getting their degree and the academic portion of it, but also being helped out with how to handle that money and make it last for the rest of their life would be very important. All right. That's the note we are going to end on. Steve, thank you. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.